This is the October 26th edition of Commodity Week.
Todd Gleason's services are made available to WILL by University of Illinois Extension.
Well, welcome to Commodity Week. I am Todd Gleason. Our panelists for the day include Merrill Crowley. He's with AgTraderTalk.com, Aaron Curtis from Midco, and Greg Johnson from TGM, along with Jim McCormick at AgMarket.net. Commodity Week, of course, is a production of Illinois Public Media. It's public radio for the farming world. Find us online, listen to us on demand anytime you'd like at willag.org, W-I-L-L. AG.org. Greg and Aaron, I think I'll start with the two of you to begin with today. Aaron, if you could take this up. As it relates to basis across the state of Illinois, there has been, and I didn't see this, but I'm told that along the Illinois River near Hennepin, the price of soybeans and the basis there had narrowed up substantially. Is that the case? And if so, why?
Yeah, so if you look at the Upper Illinois River on beans, let's say for an example, right, since the 1st of October, we've seen bean basis improve, roughly 40 cents or so. And a lot of that's driven by barge freight. So if you go back to the first part of October, we had barge freight roughly 1,000% on the Upper Illinois River. And today we're trading barge freight roughly around 650. So that's gotten better by about 350%. So on the Upper Illinois River on beans, every 100% of barge freight equates to about 15 cents or so of added transportation costs. So the higher barge freight goes, the more expensive it is to transport grain to the Gulf, and thusly results in basis being weaker to kind of account for that. So that's been the biggest change.
Just as an FYI, apparently the internet was not interested in having Aaron Curtis answer this question. We took a running stab at it twice. Actually, three times. You'll hear him clarify this answer at the end of the program. The short version for the answer is that for every 100% that freight rates change in Hennepin, the price of soybeans change by 15 cents. They've gone down 300%, so the price of soybeans went up about 45 cents. It didn't have anything to do with demand. Now let's continue Commodity Week. I'll turn to you now, Greg Johnson, as the other elevator operator in our conversation today. He talked about demand, and producers really, while there is some demand, they're not being willing to make sales into this marketplace. Basis, of course, lifting. And it's a little odd, I guess, I feel like, just because it's a freight rate. Farmers probably see that as demand, but really not. So things haven't changed, I suppose, fundamentally in this case?
Well, the one thing that we haven't mentioned is bean harvest is about over in Illinois. So once those beans get put away, we almost always see a rebound in basis. We had some wider than usual basis levels right during the gut slot of fall harvest. But now that bean harvest is all but wrapped up here in Illinois, we are seeing the processors and the exporters improve their bids quite dramatically. A lot of it has to do with the barge freight, as Aaron said, but a part of it is just the fact that bean harvest is basically over. Farmers sold not as many as usual, but a higher percentage of soybeans than corn. And so they really don't want to sell any more beans. They'd love to sell some more corn if the market would allow that to happen. But basically, I think they're comfortable with where they are as far as bean sales, even though it's behind their normal pace. And now they're just going to sit back and wait and see if they get the flat price that they want or until they need money, whichever comes first.
Merrill Crowley, what do you think flat price that should be acceptable to a farmer might be, or where we're headed in that marketplace?
Most of the guys I talk to say they can make money right now. They have pretty good yields, and with the prices where they're at, they can make money. They all are eyeballing $5.13, just like everybody else is. And you saw what happened Friday when we hit that mark. Selling came into the market, and a lot of that was due to improved basis levels as well as the run-up in price.
Jim McCormick, let's turn to you now. As you have been having discussions with farmers about what they should do related to commercial storage, what do you tell them?
Well, relating to commercial storage, I pretty much tell them to do the math of what it's going to cost them to actually store the grain. You've got lots of times storage fees out to the end of the year. But on top of it, you look at the interest cost of money right now. We're figuring it's roughly 3.25 cents for corn. It was up to over 4 cents a month just in interest on corn. Your bean interest is around 8.5 to 9 cents. It has pushed higher than that. So when you do the overall cost, Todd, of storing grain into the spring, you've got to make a decision. You know, if you think the board's going to rally, you can always sell the grain and buy the futures right back. So I think it's more of a basis play is what I'm telling farmers. Do you think the basis can rally enough to offset that storage charge and fee and cost? And if it's not, considering moving the grain if you can, and then, you know, re-own it on paper. I would encourage them to keep some ownership in because of what's going on in South America. The weather is far from ideal. It's early in the season. We don't know which way it's going to break. But if it would break bad and you end up having a drier than normal production or season, end up with production losses per se, with a tight U.S. carryout around $220 million, you could get a pretty bullish knee-jerk reaction if the market would get nervous that the crop's not there. So I think it's worth re-owning, but you definitely got to figure out that cost if it's worth reowning in the commercial sector or maybe on paper.
Merrill, I want to come back to you. Can you talk a little bit about the seasonalities for both corn and soybeans and what the charts are telling you today?
Seasonality suggests a low here in October. Sometimes in years like this where things are early, it can be pushed on down into December when prices are falling. It's tough to figure out exactly where it's going, especially in this time period when everybody keeps talking recession. We've been talking recession for, what, 400 years now? It seems like an awful long time that we've been talking this. If you look at some charts for the definite for the commodities in general, it looks like we're going to see some sort of low coming up at the end of 24, early 25. Dease corn has a wedge pattern. It's suggested to move up to 569, but we just haven't had the push to push it there. And failure would be a close below 475. That would then target 452. Jan beans have a low at 1141.5. June 2nd has a huge volume spike, which suggests that longs puked at that point. And this would make this a significant price support. It is possible to suggest a head and shoulder low with a neckline of 1404. For this to validate, we need a close above that 1404. Dease meal has a wedge target of 459.5. Failure would be close below 412.9. Soy oil looks to have a completed five-wave pattern lower, and the first indication of a virtual trend would be a close above 5263 May. Making a new low here suggests an incorrect pattern count with a likelihood of a move lower. Wheat's in a downward channel. We touched the low side of that channel at 540 just recently. A close higher here would suggest a move towards the high side of that channel to around 7.
I do have some questions about wheat and how it's related to corn and soybeans. I guess, Greg, I'll ask you this question. On the global supply charts, corn and soybean are plentiful. Wheat is not. Wheat not one of the biggest things for the United States market. However, the ratio between or the spread between wheat and corn is really important. Does that ratio at this point tell you it needs to widen out? And if so, is it mostly that wheat goes higher, or is it mostly that corn goes lower?
Well, historically, you would say that prices would need to go a little bit higher since we pulled off so much the last 2 years. So I guess that's my bias, is that wheat would go higher and corn could basically stay where it's at. You know, we'll have to see how export demand fares here with wheat. As you said, U.S. wheat is the highest price wheat in the world. We're always the sellers of last resort. So buyers are going to buy from other countries first, unless it's just not available. And then we can see it come into the U.S. and then we can see a spike. But that hasn't happened yet. And until it does, I guess I would say that, historically, even though wheat's quite a bit lower than where it was, we may want to look at selling rallies, because if we do get a 50-cent rally in wheat, fundamentally, that probably should be sold.
Yeah, Aaron, I thought it was interesting that Greg was building a friendly scenario and then told us that corn needed to just stay where it was, even if wheat went higher. What's your view of these two marketplaces?
Yeah, I think wheat, from our perspective, right, from the more of the commercial grain space, is the fact that you look at the carries in wheat, right? We saw the SEP-DEES wheat spread go to full carry. We've seen DEES March wheat spreads flirt with full carry in that mid-30s area from the DEES to March. It's come in here a little bit the last week or two because we have seen China come in and buy a little bit of U.S. soft red winter wheat. I think in the export sales report this morning, we saw China, you know, 2.5 million of the 13 million total. That was all classes. But I think as we look at from a commercial standpoint, the carries in the wheat market, especially as we move from here east, has prompted a lot more wheat to be carried this year, which from a logistics standpoint here, as we move through harvest and say, you know, Ohio, for example, right, we're seeing more space capitalized by wheat. And then you throw in a really good bean crop and that leaves something that is going to, you know, have to give here in terms of just space. So I think as we go more towards that Ohio area where things are full of wheat, and we've seen that Toledo area stock up on wheat again, adding to deliverable stocks, throw in a pretty good bean crop, and then, you know, we still got a lot of corn still to be harvested out in the further east. It's going to have to find a home. So that's going to be an interesting prospect to see what happens with kind of corn basis out that way as they kind of work through corn. But I think the from our standpoint, it's the carries in the wheat market that's really changed how we handle wheat from the commercial side this fall and winter.
So, Jim, if the space is going to be at a premium in the eastern Corn Belt, do farmers there, because you mentioned having to work the basis and potentially thinking about that as to whether it closes or gets stronger or weaker going into December and what it means for commercial storage, do farmers in the eastern Corn Belt, Ohio, Indiana, parts of Illinois, need to work basis differently than farmers in the western part of the Corn Belt?
Well, I think it will, like you said, like the gentleman was stating, I mean, there's a lot more grain in the east compared to our clients in the west. Storage is definitely going to be, you know, a premium right now. You know, I think the basis, you're going to see basis improvement happen a lot quicker in the west than the east, plain and simple, because they are definitely have a little bit smaller crop, especially in portions of Iowa into Minnesota. Their crops just weren't there. They have had, it's not a disaster. It's just a little bit tighter, and that should force their basis to improve a little bit quicker than the east.
Do you suspect that ethanol plants will produce, as they have, and I almost want to call this a seasonal, a lot of ethanol in the first half of the marketing year now through March, as opposed to the second half of the marketing year, and that will cause corn to need to move to the west as it has in the past year?
I don't believe so. I know last year we saw a lot of grain from the east get railed west into the feed yards to feed that inventory. Their production, Todd, I believe, is down, but it's not going to be down enough that you're going to have this big shipment of moving grain from east to west at this point in time. But, you know, our viewpoint is at this point, the ethanol industry should do very well. You know, the economy, you know, we smoked it, 4.9% GDP. If the consumer continues to keep spending, the economy stays strong. That should, you know, hopefully keep the demand for, you know, energy going and keep the ethanol grind, you know, pushing forward.
So, Greg, does that mean that the placement of corn, that is, that the Western Corn Belt will have normal basis levels and the Eastern Corn Belt will remain weak?
That's a good question. I guess I would say the farmers haven't sold a lot of corn ahead, so there's a lot of corn hanging over the market. That's probably going to keep a lid on basis levels in the east. I'm not sure the farmers sold any more percentage-wise in the west, but as Jim said, their crop wasn't quite as good as it was in the east, so maybe percentage-wise they're a little bit heavier sold, and so basis levels may need to bounce a little bit higher and sooner in the west. So I guess it really kind of all boils down to export demand. I think we're going to feed about the same number. I don't see that number increasing. I don't see ethanol use number increasing. I mean, it's been pretty steady for the last several years. So I think the wild card in all this is exports. And with the strong dollar, Today, that doesn't look like a very good bet, but obviously things can change. But as of today, demand just looks steady, stagnant, and that does not bode well for sharply higher prices. Maybe we can get a post-harvest rebound, but it's going to take something that we don't know about today to get these corn markets moving sharply higher.
I was going to say, the one thing on the production side, the East versus West, I mean, something interesting, Illinois and Wisconsin are really the only two states out there that are actually have a reduction in corn production year on year. Like, but, you know, you got the Nebraska, their production's up over 200 million, South Dakota, North Dakota, even Iowa's up over 37 million. Like I said, we are, Illinois is the only state besides Wisconsin, our corn production's actually dropped in the 23-24 cycle. Kind of interesting. That's why, like I said, with that rebound in the West, you shouldn't need to see a lot of grain push east to west like we did a year ago.
And then that brings us, Merrill, to that export market, which was mentioned by Greg Johnson. It will be invaluable for the corn market, particularly, and soybeans. This is the time of the year soybeans normally should go. We talked a little bit about basis getting better, that a freight rate function. Do you see demand for corn and soybeans? And what about the competition that comes out of South America?
It's pretty stiff, but it's interesting. We talked about the higher dollar and how it's going to cut our export market. However, we've had a 50% retracement from our high that we had back in 2022 down to our low that we had in 2023. And yet we're competitive in the markets when you look at the bids. It is curious as to why we're not seeing more corn demand. I do think if we continue to have the problems that we have in Ukraine, because they had to shut down their corridor for a while, and China had been buying corn from Ukraine, that maybe we'll get some of that business from China. But right now, and I'm at a loss for trying to explain it, our higher dollar is still not affecting or pushing us out of the market price-wise like we had it expected to do.
Is it a preference on the part of the end user when they have an equal and same commodity price, that is, and I don't know whether that's the case, Merrill, out of South America and North America?
I would say, at least from China, that's a preference, just to kind of, they always, when you're not getting along with them the best, they always tend to favor the nations they are getting along with better. And then you could throw back at that the fact that they just signed some of those treaties suggesting they're going to, you know, buy grain. They have come into the market
for
beans.
States.
Yes, from
right.
The United States. They were signed in Des Moines yesterday, I believe. And as you see, usually when you see those contracts signed, you usually see buying come from China. Now, we haven't had a lot, but the last 2 days, we've seen reports of purchases of soybeans anyway from them. The other thing might be is as you move down the road, and we look at the Amazon and how dry it is and the shipping from their facilities being snarled and possibly the weather. This weather has been really strange, but the El Nino suggests it stays drier in Brazil, and we may have a problem with that second corn, and that could bring China into our market.
Jim McCormick, how has the drought in Argentina, which impacted total soybean production and bean meal particularly, played into the marketplace? I know over the last couple of weeks it has been trading bean meal prices in Chicago much higher. How long does that last, and what does it mean for reconfiguration of trade flows, if anything?
Well, in the long run, it probably is not going to change a whole lot because, you know, the demand's been moved around because of the drought in Argentina. If they recover, we'll probably get back to normal. But, you know, there's a lot of estimates. I believe the ADMIS call about their quarterly profits is saying that, you know, essentially Argentina is going to be out of beans here in November. So until Argentina gets this crop planted and harvested, we should see a pretty good opening of trying to sell meal to the world. That's what spiked the bean meal up here recently, I believe. But we've got to be a little bit cautious if you're a meal bull. Every time you get around this $430 level over the last year, we've stalled out. And we have seen, Todd, some of the demand move away from meal. We are seeing some exporters show a little bit more interest in buying distillers grains and shying away from the meal as a way to essentially say, hey, look, meal's too expensive. Let's go with a substitute. So the meal, could pull back a little bit, but we should keep a bid under the market until we know that Argentina does have a crop this upcoming year.
Logistically, Aaron Curtis, while the futures might call for bean meal or be high in price and call for bean meal out of the United States, the United States isn't particularly prepared to move bean meal to the export market. What difference does that make?
Well, we've gotten much better at it, right? I think there is some need, and we've seen exports continue to improve here on soybean meal, at least in the short term, because of Argentina's lack of beans. You know, it's always interesting when you see Argentina, who had a small crop anyway, decide to export a bunch of beans and then turn around and have to import them from Brazil. Sometimes that doesn't make a lot of sense from a 30,000 point view. But I think longer term, right, I think there's going to be a continued need for the U.S. to be a bigger player on the meal export side. If you just look at the amount of crush that's coming online over here over the next 2 years, you could really see kind of a meal problem coming down the pipeline here. Is what are we going to do with all this meal? Obviously, a lot of the bean oil is going to be spoken for, but the meal is the piece of where we're going to find a home for it all. So I think on the export side is one of the outlets that we got to continue to be competitive on and continue to, from a logistics standpoint, to be able to move it to those spots that can kind of move it to other parts of the world. So I think meal exports here over the next couple of years is going to be one of these key factors to continue to keep an eye on.
Jim McCormick, do we think that the build out in infrastructure for soybean oil, renewable diesel will be big enough and complete enough next year to actually create this issue, or is it a following year issue?
Right now, I think it's probably going to more following, depending on where kind of the interest rates are. I mean, I think some of the production is going to slow down, the cost of money so much more, but, we are going that way. The decision's been made, it seems like. So, yeah, I mean, I think, you're going to see a big build out for the renewable diesel. Meal, I agree, is going to be 100% of the problem here in a couple of years, is how do we get rid of all this excess meal supply? That's going to be the real problem for the market. I mean, for years and years and years, Todd, we crushed for meal. Oil was the byproduct. Oil was something we just used to try to figure out how to get rid of. It's going to turn around, it looks like, in our viewpoint, as we next couple of years, we'll be crushing for the oil, and the meal may actually be the quote-unquote byproduct when it's all said and done.
Merle, what haven't we covered that you wanted to talk about today? Anything?
Well, Jim touched on it when he was talking about the interest costs in carrying corn or beans out here. And I just wanted to go on. FarmDoc had a study, it's been several years ago, and they were looking at options and what options would pay you back if you use the options. May and July options have, at least in this study, the best chance of seeing return. And I know a lot of people are looking to buy their call options in March. To me, that's a little bit iffy. You're coming off the February, what they call the John Deere lows, and usually when you have a large carryout, especially in the corn market like we have this year, you will be sitting in a situation where March may be a just dead market. So I'm looking at May, and I'm looking at the cost of taking things out to May in storage. I have my total cost for that somewhere around 58 cents for corn and 82 cents for beans. I'm using 7% interest. I don't know what the other guys are using. So my thought is, if I compare that with a $5 at the money call of $5 for corn, it cost me 29 and a quarter cents at the close tonight to put that on an option. It cost me 13 for a 1320 soybean option, cost 68. So I can put and hold value to my corn till May a lot cheaper than I can in commercial storage. True, I give up any basis improvement there, but right now I just think when you're looking at that and you're looking at, say, do I take my money and run, or do I incur the extra cost, it looks to me right now that the options are the way to go, and May options at that.
I want to get a final word from each of you, but Aaron, I'd like to come back to you for just a second on the explanation we started with up front as to why bean bases or bases in general had improved and the Illinois and Mississippi River. At this point, do you suppose that the river flow will be good enough, given rainfall that's now coming, to continue to hold that basis higher, and should farmers count on it?
Well, I think you go into the winter season, right? The concern with low water, right, is that it's pretty a lot easier to freeze low water than it is higher water, right? So I think that's the concern as we cool down here, right? We have some instances where we even slowed the river down a little bit more because it gets cold. But I think based on the fact that we've had some rain, we've got some more in the forecast, I think river levels are going to continue to stabilize at least through the next couple of weeks. I think the question is going to be, do we continue to feed that river system moving forward? If we did see some sort of uptick in demand, mainly on the corn side, I think that would be a little bit of concern for barge freight, because if you have fairly low water levels and you all of a sudden add a little more interest in, that's probably not a great scenario for barge freight to stay a lot lower. So I think got to continue to watch the forecast, got to continue to watch the export demand side as we continue to move forward. But I would say overall, we'll probably see barge freight somewhat supported versus historical numbers here, just because that low water is going to continue to be a little bit of a hamper here as we move through the winter.
Let me rephrase that and see if I'm correct. So your concern, at least at this point, is that if demand ticks up for corn, any premium would be eaten up by an increase in barge freight.
That's correct. Right. Right. Yeah, because if you look at last year, right, we traded Illinois River barge freight up to 2,000%. We got up to 1,200, right? And the real reason, we had a similar low water situation last year. The difference, of course, is the corn export program was, what, double what it was? I don't know the exact numbers, but nearly double what we had this year, right? So you had low water plus the need to get the grain to the Gulf, right? And that ended up, people had to end up paying more for more barges because you can't load as much grain in a low water barge as you could if water was normal. So you have to bid up and buy more barges, right, to move the same amount of grain. So we just haven't had that situation this year. So if we did see an uptick in corn demand to the exports, it may be partially offset by the fact that barge freight might increase as well, and you may not see the net gain in basis that you would expect.
Let's get a final word now from each of you. I'll start with you, Merrill Crowley, from AgTraderTalk.com.
We do have opportunities coming down the road, but a lot of it will depend on weather. Seasonals will make a low if they haven't already. It looks real good, like we do have our low in from the cycle timing. The next low is due somewhere around Jan-Feb for both corn and beans. So use that according, and I think if we're trying to focus on having prices like we've had the last 2 years for highs, it's going to be difficult, especially in the corn market, when you're looking at 2 billion plus carryout. The bean market is tight, and yes, if we could see more demand, and if they have weather problems in South America, that market could push up rather quickly and maybe get you close to those highs. So push your pencil pretty hard. You've had some of these places have had good yields, some haven't. And I think you might be wise to not be pushing for as high prices as we've seen in the last couple of years.
Greg Johnson from TGM, TotalGrainMarketing.com, your final word?
A couple of things. I would say, I would echo what Merrill just said. I think there may be a short window here, a three-month window of opportunity in the soybean market. South America, parts of it off to a dry start. It is an El Nino year. USDA did lower U.S. bean exports by 35 million, even though we're on pace to reach USDA's target. I think the reason they did that, it was they didn't want the carryout to go below 200 million bushels. So bean stocks are extremely tight. It wouldn't take much to get a little bit of a rally, but keep in mind, South America is planting more bean acres. We are going to plant more bean acres, I think, ourselves here in the U.S. So this window may be relatively short-lived, but use that window of opportunity to get some beans sold. The other thing is focus on revenue. People are talking about $13 beans and $5 corn, but the yields are so much better that maybe if you could do the math, we can get by with a little bit less on the price because we had a little bit better yield. So focus on revenue, not just price.
Jim McCormick from AgMarket.net, your final word.
Real quick, I agree with the gentleman on the beans. Your window is probably the next 60 to 90 days. After that, I think if South America weather is there, it's going to be hard for us to be competitively priced. But on the corn, I'm going to caution a lot of the, you know, producers out there. There is a nice carry in the market. You know, you're looking at not as wide as it was, but 14 cents out to March. The market is enticing you to put it in the bin. Let's face it, Todd, putting it in the bin the last couple of years and sell it in the late winter, spring, summer has paid off handsomely. I am worried that we are changing into more of a bear market as we start growing these stocks. Historically, when you put your, you see a growth in ending stocks, we are projected this year, you're producing more than you're consuming. About half the time, you don't put that fall low in until late in the fall, more after the October WASD traditionally, as late as November, December, about half the time. So there is a likelihood that there's a 50% chance that we have not scored that fall low. The other thing I'm cautious about is where the September corn went off the board at. It went off the board around 463. If we traditionally go into a traditional bear market, that could be your downward target for the Dease corn. And if nothing changes and South America does not have any weather problems and China doesn't come in and buy a lot of corn, I think you could be lulled to sleep. And by the spring, your March and May contracts could be down on those price levels. So if you are holding grain in the bin and plan on selling it to the spring, you might consider using some kind of an option floor to defend your revenue in case this bear market does come to life and we do what we normally do, fall to where the previous market went off, previous front month went off the board.
Aaron Curtis from Midco, your word?
Well, the U.S. has unfortunately returned to a residual supplier of grain to the world, which means we really obviously can't compete globally on the export side because we're too expensive. So I think that comes down to needing a weather problem around the world or some sort of disruption in order to improve the export side of the balance sheet. And without that, I think markets continue to stay range bound and continue to struggle on rallies. I think one thing we got to continue to keep in mind is the producer still owns a large share of the 2023 corn and bean crop that they just harvested. And typically in those situations, right, rallies continue to struggle because that grain continues to hang over the market. So, you know, use some realistic targets here in order to price grain moving forward, keeping in mind that without an improved export program, we're probably going to continue to stay range-bound here through the winter.
Commodity Week is a production of Illinois Public Media. You may find and listen to the whole of our program anytime you'd like at willag.org, on demand, willag.org, or search it out in your favorite podcast applications. Our panelists for the day have included Merrill Crowley of AgTraderTalk.com, Aaron Curtis from Midco, Greg Johnson at TGM, and Jim McCormick at AgMarket.net. I'm University of Illinois Extension's Todd Gleason.